Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
And just like that, the market jumps right back up, and then some. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Wednesday, December 26th. Good to have you with us today. So Monday, Christmas Eve, the market dove. Then everyone took a day off, took a deep breath, and today stocks finished up, way up. The Dow and the S&P both jumped nearly 5%. And all of a sudden, our retirement accounts looked a little healthier again. For more, we've got Marketplace's Kimberly Adams with us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, Adrienne.
So make sense of this volatility for me. What's going on?
I mean, it's good news for us. It keeps us in business. But on the other hand, it's pretty nerve-wracking for investors. I mean, we had this huge jump today after the big drop on Christmas Eve. And we should keep in mind that trading is pretty thin because of the holidays. And so you don't necessarily have as many people participating in the markets. So the moves that we see do tend to be quite amplified.
What do they tell us about where investors' heads are?
I think what you've got is two opposing forces. You've got market fundamentals, as we call them. These are the numbers that we have about how businesses and the broader economy are actually doing. But then you've also got fear of the future triggered by, say, a weird press release from the Treasury Secretary or a tweet from the president. And the president did not tweet about the markets today. So you've got these two forces fighting it out in the markets. And then on top of that, computers or robots, which are doing a lot of the trading, especially when volatility is high, and they don't take the day off. So a wild market swing can often kick those buying and selling algorithms into action.
Is the market likely to keep up these dramatic back and forth? I mean, do I need to get some more, even more intense versions of our numbers music?
I like the numbers music the way it is. But yeah, I mean, look, as long as we keep up this high level of uncertainty, for example, the ongoing partial government shutdown, we're probably going to keep seeing these swings, because when you don't really know what's ahead, which markets like that certainty, you do tend to see this whiplash reaction whenever you do get some kind of news. I mean, and just looking at that partial government shutdown, we don't know when that's going to lift. We're thinking now that nothing's going to happen until January 3rd when the Democrats come in. And we're talking about 800,000 federal workers who are not getting paid at the moment. But because a lot of those people might have been off for the holiday anyway, we're not really feeling it in the same way that we might. It hasn't trickled into the broader economy just yet. But again, that's just because the holiday this week has obscured a lot of what's happened. That said, the longer this partial shutdown drags on, the more we're probably going to feel it.
Speaking of the holiday, we have retail numbers out today that did seem to help along the markets.
Right. A new MasterCard report said sales leading up to Christmas were more than 5% up from last year. That's about $850 billion, the strongest sales in 6 years. We saw similar numbers from retailers like Amazon, which claimed, quote unquote, record-breaking holiday sales. And this gets us back to those market fundamentals. The economy does still seem to be strong, but the volatility reflects this sense of unease among investors that, for whatever reason you want to pick on a given day, the idea that even if things are good, they can swing the other way at any moment.
So, big question here for regular people watching their 401ks bounce around. What's the best advice here?
Honestly, and look, I am not a financial planner, but if you have a plan and you can stomach it, I just say look away.
Which is my general approach. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams in Washington, D.C. Thanks.
No problem.
One thing Kimberly didn't talk about was any new government data. That's because there hasn't been much these past couple of days. And that data void could continue if the partial government shutdown drags on. Marketplace's Justin Ho explains.
Christmas week is a quiet time for economic data, but we've seen a lot of volatility lately. Matt Miskin, a market strategist at John Hancock Investments, says markets could use some hard numbers.
The markets are kind of at the edge of their seat, waiting for the next data point that could provide them with either a recovery or further downside.
New home sales could be one of those data points. The Commerce Department is supposed to release those figures tomorrow. But the Commerce Department is closed. So is the Bureau of Economic Analysis, which is supposed to release GDP and inflation figures at the end of January. If those don't come, that's not just a problem for traders. Miskin says the Fed needs that information, too.
We want the Fed to have that data available to them so that they can make the best decision possible in the next Fed meeting.
The Fed is trying to slow the economy down to something that is sustainable in the long run.
That's Seth Carpenter, chief U.S. economist at UBS.
Where that inflection point is, where we slow down to something that's more sustainable, is just really difficult to know in real time.
Carpenter spent over 15 years at the Fed and a couple years at the Treasury. He's lived through government shutdowns before. But he says this time, giving the Fed data could not be more important.
The risk is they slow things down too much and cause a recession. The other risk is that they don't slow things down anywhere near enough, and we get a bout of sustained inflation that they have to combat that much more forcefully.
In the absence of data from the federal government, markets are likely to focus on other information, says John Doyle at Tempus FX, a foreign exchange company.
So if you have five data points and on that day you only have four, you're only going to get to focus on those four. They're going to have more importance.
And that information might reflect market psychology more than the underlying fundamentals of the economy and give markets one more thing to be anxious about. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
The Santa Claus rally arrived. It was late, but it arrived. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The day after Christmas, and that pretty much means two things. A promise to eat fewer cookies next year, as always, and retail returns. You know, the slow cooker that's just too big for your kitchen counter, the aspirational exercise gear that will more than likely remain aspirational, or the green sweater that your aunt thought would be just perfect for you. After a record holiday shopping season, Marketplace's Marielle Segarra takes a look at the economics of the holiday return.
This may come as a surprise. More than 40% of shoppers surveyed by the National Retail Federation said they're planning to keep their unwanted holiday gifts. But that still leaves plenty of people who are going to show up in stores and try to make a return. And for retailers, that can be a big hit, even if you return something for store credit, because just the act of processing your return costs them money. Let's say you're returning that itchy sweater you got from your aunt. Carol Speakerman is CEO at the advisory firm Speakerman Retail.
It can be expensive on a number of fronts, and some are just direct costs in terms of manpower, putting things back on the shelf, you know, repackaging items.
Or maybe the store doesn't carry those sweaters. Your aunt bought it for you in another state. The store has to spend money to send your return somewhere else. And that's just returns that happen in store. Joel Bynes at Alex Partners says if you want to return something by mail, let's say your aunt bought that sweater online, it can cost the retailer twice as much.
Instead of having someone put the boxes in their car, drive to a store, return the product, now they are boxing them up, getting a return label, and they mail it back to the retailers.
And that gets expensive.
Now the retailer is paying for freight both directions, given free shipping both ways, which has become very common in the industry.
If you do return that sweater in store, you could find something else you like or end up spending more than the gift cost. So that's a plus for the retailer. Carol Speakerman again.
Once you get them in the store, you exponentially increase the chances that they will purchase another item.
She says retailers will get another chance to settle the score come January when people head to the stores to use the gift cards they got for Christmas. Research shows that's when people really tend to overspend. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
And if you're still not tired of the holiday shopping season, tomorrow on the Marketplace Morning Report, we'll look at the business model behind a lot of the tech gadgets we got under the tree. Getting into award season time in Hollywood. The gowns, the speeches, the made-for-TV drama of it all. Handing out awards for made-for-TV dramas. Behind nearly all of the movies and TV shows we watch, there are hundreds of people pitching in to make all levels of decisions, including what music plays in what scenes. That task falls under the job description of a music supervisor. And that job is the subject of today's installment in our series, How to Be a Blank.
My name is Morgan Rhodes. I am a music supervisor. I'm currently working on Dear White People for Netflix, but I also music supervise the film Selma and an independent film that gave me my start called Middle of Nowhere. I've been in radio for a really long time, and so I was auditioning for a radio show, and a director happened to hear that audition, and I was contacted after that show and asked if I would be interested in music supervising a film that was in post. And I said yes. That film went to Sundance, and the rest is history. I think being able to watch the film with an audience and hear the music that I had selected, I thought, well, this is pretty cool. That moment sitting in Sundance watching that film with people and having them react to the music was the moment I thought, maybe I could do this. I don't want to have to tell my mother that I went to college for nothing. Music supervision is mastery at managing moments musically. And I think it takes the connection of carrying the narrative without overshadowing the narrative. Sonically speaking, it's like not killing a good outfit with bad shoes. You have the responsibility of holding that moment in your hands and making it so that it builds the story and it builds that moment. I think the high for me is the chase. Once I know that I am looking for a song and I come in at the script phase, I make little notes and identify places where songs should go. And once I find that, that's almost more exciting than watching it sync to picture. The best piece of advice I got was quite simple. Three words. Listen to everything. I would say, make sure that you love both music and other forms of visual media, especially film and television.
Morgan Rhodes shared some of her favorite scenes that she's chosen the music for. You can listen to them, see them at marketplace.org. Coming up?
I mean, the world moves in cardboard, right? Whether it be manufactured and coming from China to the United States, or whether it's leaving the United States, going back to China or somewhere else in the world.
The cardboard economy. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 1,086 points, 4.9% to close at 22,878. The Nasdaq gained 361 points, 5.8% to end at 6,554. And the S&P 500 was up 116 points, 4.9% to finish at 2,467. Department store operator Kohl's leapt 10.2%. Macy's moved up 7%. Target shot up 5.7%. Walmart grew 5.3%. All this as a report from MasterCard said it was the best holiday season in 6 years. MasterCard, for that matter, swiped up 6.7%. Visa bounced 6.9%. PayPal increased 7.4%. Social media companies also rebounded today. Facebook brightened 8.1%. Twitter soared 8.3%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.81%. You're listening to Marketplace.
December 31st is coming up fast, and that means time is running out to support Marketplace and make your gift go twice as far. Donate today to invest in news you value and trust, and your contribution in any amount will be matched dollar for dollar by our friends at Candida. Now's the time. Go to marketplace.org and make a gift in any amount to become a Marketplace investor today. And thanks.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
You're listening to Marketplace. I'm Adrienne Hill. This year, the tech industry made news over and over and over again. Data breaches, privacy scandals, new regulations, more data breaches. Big tech companies have been in the spotlight. The CEOs of Facebook, Twitter, and Google have all been summoned to Congress. Lawmakers grilled them about the ways user data is used and misused. As this year comes to a close, we called up Molly Wood, the host of Marketplace Tech, to get a sense of what might be next. Hi, Molly.
Hi, Adrienne. How are you?
I'm well. We finished up 2018 with the Marriott hack. The hundreds of millions of customers' data were exposed. Can we expect companies are going to do any better guarding our data next year?
I want to hope that they are. I think that, you know, there are certainly going to be some who just don't have the infrastructure to do a better job because it has not been a priority. So I think you can still expect more large breaches. That's just become par for the course. But I think you are going to see a lot more pressure from the legal side of things for companies to step up their game. And that's kind of the best hope that we have.
What's that pressure look like? Are we talking federal regulation, state regulation? Where does it come from?
Well, in 2018, obviously, we had a big sea change come from Europe with the General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR. And that really put a lot of companies on notice, I think, that they had to do a better job of dealing with customer data if they did business in Europe. You are starting to see California, for example, passed broad privacy laws that are similar to GDPR. Other states are moving in that direction. And so now there is talk of federal privacy regulation. I still give it about a 50-50 chance of being introduced in 2019. But for the first time, you see tech companies pushing for it because they want an overarching federal standard instead of this weird patchwork of state laws.
Is there any more data to steal? I keep wondering that. Every time there's a new breach, I'm like, how much more data actually exists for them to take?
I keep wondering that too. And then I think, I don't know, they say about a million more people get online every day. So maybe it's their new data. It's like refresh.
Refresh.
You hit refresh and you got to get the new people.
What? So we've talked some about security. There is also, there are changes to privacy, the things that companies can gather, how they share it. Do you think we're going to see more of that discussion happening next year?
I really do, because I do think, to the point about consumer behavior, I think you're finally seeing consumers start to say, you know, maybe this is a little much. Maybe we need to dial it back a little.
Do you really need to know this? Yeah.
Exactly. Do you really need to know this? And that's the real question. And there's a realization of actually the business model of the internet and that advertising depends on your data. And so, there was a Pew report earlier this year that said some 70% of consumers had taken some action to secure their data. And I think as you start to see the Internet of Things, you know, voice-enabled devices come into more people's houses, I think consumers, this might just be hope, are going to start asking better questions about the stuff they use every day.
What's interesting, though, is at the same time we're inviting these technology companies into our homes and lives in an even greater way is the time we're asking, right, we're saying, yes, you can listen in on what I'm saying. Just don't do anything with it.
Without a doubt. And so this is the year I think we find out how much people trust Amazon, because Alexa is certainly leading the charge into people's homes, and they're using it to connect their lights and their refrigerator and their TV and their thermostat and their door locks. And so I think the stakes really are getting raised.
What else are we going to be talking about in 2019?
You know, I think we are going to be talking about that Internet of Things, all these connected devices.
As we have been.
As we have been. But at an even higher level, I think we're going to be talking about how tech and globalization sort of fit together. I think we thought for a long time that technology would just cross borders.
Right.
And what we're starting to see now, especially with the internet and the way the internet works, is that Europe wants one version, the US wants one version. And I think you might actually start to see a real conversation about balkanization, about multiple internets that are like culturally appropriate for where they're located. And that's, you know, not going to touch a lot of consumers directly, but it's going to be really interesting.
Molly Wood is the host of Marketplace Tech. Thanks so much, Molly.
Thanks, Adrian.
As we mentioned earlier in the show, there's a lot of stuff getting mailed back this time of year. Also, a lot of stuff that was mailed to us in the first place, most of it in cardboard boxes. You'd think that as online buying increases, it'd be a good time to be in the business of selling cardboard. But turns out it's not quite that simple. Marketplace's Jed Kim explains.
You know who really notices the crazy amount of cardboard there is this time of year? The people who have to haul it away.
Look at the can right there. See it just sticking out.
Robert Eni has been hauling trash and recycling for the city of LA for close to 20 years. He drives one of those trucks with the arm that picks up household recycling bins and shakes their contents into the hopper.
Cardboard is the enemy as far as a recycle, because it's hard to pack.
It takes up a bunch of space. People don't break down their boxes. And it's getting worse.
Everybody buying things now more on the internet and having it shipped to their house, there can be no question there's way more cardboard.
With all the stops he has to make just to compact the loads, it means taking on an extra hour or two to his workday, especially after Christmas. You know, after all the... Yay! If Christmas seemed like a cardboard frenzy at your house, imagine it on a much larger scale. Make Shop & Company is a service that sells retail items purchased in America to customers mostly in Korea. All day long, workers repackage American goods in new boxes to ship overseas. Before Christmas, they were sending as many as 5,000 boxes a day from their Gardena, California center. Normally, it's around 1,000. Eric Cho is the director of business development.
I mean, the world moves in cardboard, right? Whether it be manufactured and coming from China to the United States, or whether it's leaving the United States, going back to China or somewhere else in the world.
This global market for packaging is worth about $33 billion today. A small slice of that belongs to Aurora Packaging Solutions. Ray Hulskamp is head of operations at the company's Orange County location and takes me onto the factory floor. We wind up and down aisles stacked with enormous rolls of paper.
This one weighs 5,400 pounds.
The rolls unspool in a brown blur into machines that steam, shape, and glue together the layers until they become sturdy brown sheets ready to be cut and folded. Aurora's production line runs round the clock 24 hours.
We have four plants in Southern California. All four plants produce about 5 billion square feet.
In a year, that's enough to cover 179 square miles. Business is humming. But Hulskamp hasn't forgotten the 90s, when the cardboard industry got squeezed as American manufacturing declined. It also shifted more to things that didn't fit in boxes, like planes and cars. While the era of online retail has helped stabilize things, he says it hasn't made for crazy growth.
We're making about the same amount of corrugated we did 20 years ago, even though this demand is going up. And that's because people are using it so much more effectively today.
He says there's less redundant packaging these days. By the way, did you notice how he called it corrugated and not cardboard?
There's a big difference between a corrugated box and a cardboard box.
Cardboard comprises a single sheet of material. Corrugated has three layers of paper, including that wavy middle part. It's super strong, and it's what most of us mean when we incorrectly say cardboard. Companies like Amazon are getting more efficient with the packages they send. And the corrugated itself is constantly improving.
The fiber has gotten thinner. The paper has gotten stronger. Everything's gotten better to allow us to be able to ship more weight in a lighter weight package.
In other words, the cardboard container might just have more engineering than the gift that's in it. So don't feel too disappointed if on Christmas morning, your kid just wanted to play with the box. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
A couple things before we go today. I was feeling bad about myself for wanting a fancy new trash can for Christmas, because really, who wants a trash can? But then I saw a list of top online purchases for all of 2018 and started to feel a little better about myself. NBC News has data from Walmart showing a whole lot of TV and pillow purchases pretty much everywhere in the U.S. In four states, the top-selling items were Instant Pots. Crayons were high on the list. In Idaho, people ordered a whole lot of refills for their Easy Bake ovens. Nevadans bought more Flamin' Hot Cheetos than anyone else, and Hoosiers ordered a whole lot of toilet bowl cleaner. So, you know, a trash can starts to seem way more reasonable. And one more odd purchase, probably unlikely to top any state list. Kai sent this one over, even though he's supposed to be off. From the corporate gimmick that somehow we want playbook, KFC has produced a fried chicken-smelling fireplace log. Each log is about $19. You burn it, and apparently it makes your home smell like a drumstick. I don't have a fireplace or a hankering for a fried chicken smell, but apparently some people do. The log is sold out. All right, that's our show today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 1,086 points, 4.9%. The Nasdaq gained 361 points, 5.8%. And the S&P 500 was up 116 points, 4.9%. Sarah Brugger, Jake Gorski, Drew Josted, Jeff Peters, Dan Powell, Daniel Ramirez, Charlton Thorpe, and Ben Tolliday engineer the program for us. And I'm Adrienne Hill. Have a good evening. We'll see you here tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.